Welcome back to Out of the Ordinary. We're your hosts, Gentry Rayburn,
Meg Stedman,
Madison Zweiker.
And in this podcast, we dissect murders, crimes that aren't your typical murder cases, that are out of the ordinary.
Last week, we introduced a new case that happened way back in 1934. If you hadn't had a chance to listen to the previous episode, stop what you're doing right now and go listen, because we cover all of the basics about the murder of Edward Ratchet.
In today's episode, we are diving into all of the alibis. In this case, there were 12 witnesses aboard the Orient Express during the murder back in 1934. Now, just a little bit of a backstory. It turns out that there was a detective by the name of Hercule Poirot on the train during the time of the murder. So luckily, he was able to start the investigation before any officials knew there was a crime.
The first alibi that we will be diving into is that of the conductor of the train, Pierre Michel. Here is a little bit about Pierre. He has been working for this train for 15 years at this time, and everyone has always made comments about how kind, trustworthy, and honest he is. So already, this guy has a good reputation. But let's get into the details about how he was drawn into the case. According to Poirot's journals that have been recently published, Pierre was asked to make up Ratchet's bed while Ratchet was at dinner. But when Pierre went to his compartment, Ratchet said that he made a mistake in calling him, as if he changed his mind. Like we've said in the previous episode, the murder approximately occurred around a quarter past one. So Poirot was asked Pierre where he was during the time of the murder, and Pierre just said something along the lines that he was back in his own seat by then, but he never really fell asleep or anything, just stayed in his seat for the rest of the night.
So there's no evidence that Pierre was there?
Nope. Once we move on to the others, you'll realize that this is the case in most of these alibis. Now let's look into the second person that was brought in for questioning, Hector McQueen. Within the first few minutes of his interview, we learned two pieces of information. First off, it turns out that Mr. Ratchet's real name was Cassetti, who was well known for the infamous kidnapping stunts back then, one of them being the case of Daisy Armstrong, a young girl who was murdered by Cassetti. The second piece of information is that we learn that McQueen's father is the district attorney who handled the case. Here's a quote from the interview. McQueen said, "I saw Miss Armstrong more than once. She was a lovely woman, so gentle and heartbroken. If ever a man deserved what he got, Ratchet or Cassetti is the man. I am rejoiced at his end. Such a man wasn't fit to live."
Wow, so basically sounds like McQueen confessed right there. Like, he has a motive in everything.
Yeah, you would think, but he has a decently strong alibi. According to the journals, McQueen went to his compartment that evening and read. He briefly talked about talking with an English lady who was in the compartment next to his, and eventually spent the remainder of the night talking to Colonel Arbuthnot. He claimed that they talked about politics over drinks until around 2 in the morning. Once the conversation was over, McQueen called the conductor to make up his bed.
So do you think he killed Ratchet while the conductor was making up his bed?
Well, according to Poirot, McQueen just smoked a cigarette outside until it was ready. Then he went to sleep. So although he did have a good motive, there was no evidence to go against the alibi. Next, we have Ratchet's valet, Edward Henry Masterman. He claimed that the last time he saw Ratchet was around 9 in the evening of his murder. He claimed that he helped Ratchet by doing typical things, folding and hanging up his clothes and making sure he had everything ready for the night. He did note, though, that he was acting unusually sad. Masterman said that it was most likely caused by a letter he was reading, and Masterman didn't seem too concerned until Ratchet asked if he was the one who put the letter there. Apparently, Ratchet swore at him and blamed it all on him, which I guess happened quite frequently. But after that, Ratchet took his usual bedtime medicine, and he said that he didn't want to be disturbed until he rang in the morning. So Masterman went back to his compartment to read a book before calling to have his bed made. He also claimed that he did not sleep much that night because of a toothache and eventually fell asleep around 4 a.m.
Wow. Did anything else happen?
Well, he did mention that to Poirot that Ratchet had lots of enemies. So between the letter in his compartment and learning that he has lots of enemies, it seems like there is more going on than Poirot originally thought. The next witness is Miss Hubbard, who stayed in the compartment next to Ratchet. Now, this lady is a frantic one. She had been waiting all day impatiently to talk to Perot because apparently the murder was in her compartment.
Wait, what?
Yeah. Anyways, she claimed that she was sound asleep in her compartment until she woke up to a man in her room. But get this, she kept her eyes shut the entire time, so she never really got a good look at him. So how credible is she? We may never know. But anyways, the conductor came in to check on her, and he made sure that the door between hers and Ratchet's was completely bolted, and he put her suitcase in front of the door as just an extra precaution. Overall, Miss Hubbard wasn't the most reliable source because the journal said that she couldn't remember what time all this happened, and she also presented some evidence of a button that was left on her floor from the suspected intruder, but turns out it was just the conductor's buttons, so all of her claims never advanced the case at all. Now, we will move on to the alibi of Greta Olson. She supposedly is the last person to see Ratchet alive. According to a source, she opened his door on accident when she was intending on going to visit Mrs. Hubbard. She said that although it was very embarrassing, all she saw was him reading a letter. After that, she went to Miss Hubbard's compartment and left around 10:55 to go to sleep. The only other person she saw that night was Mary Debenham, who she shares a compartment with.
Well, her story seems a little anticlimactic, don't you think?
Yeah, well, there isn't much to it. She saw him for 2 seconds and went about her night. Perot did write that he questioned her about her nightgown just to see if it matched the description, like we discussed last week. And she said that she didn't have a red dressing gown. So from what we can see, it looks like she's in the clear at this point.
When the day turns to night and the shadows grow long, the ADT yard sign stands watch over your home and family with 140 years of tested, trusted 24/7 protection. And now get one indoor camera and one outdoor camera installed free, plus $100 off installation. Call 1-800-ADT-ASAP today or visit ADT.com/deal. ADT, America's most trusted home security provider.
So to start off with my witnesses, we have Princess Natalia Dragomirov, which, so sorry if I mispronounced that. She was one of the first class passengers. And now she might not look like a princess, but she has the attitude of one.
What do you mean?
You'll have to wait and see. Now, according to her statement, after she had dinner, she went back to her room to get ready to bed, where she stayed up reading until 11 o'clock, and then she tried to go to sleep. But apparently she could not fall asleep. And when that happened, she called for her maid to come read to her until she finally fell asleep. When Perot asked if she had been up when the train stopped and if she had heard any noise, she said that she had been awake but had heard no noise. Now, she does have an important connection to the Armstrong case, which Gentry had talked about earlier, and this is going to come into play later. Next, we have the Count and Countess Adjourney. Now, when it was time for the Count and Countess to come to be interviewed, Perot noted that the Count came by himself, which is kind of a little weird. And in his witness statement, the Count said that they were both asleep and that they had heard nothing at all. End of story. Now, the Count and Countess both had the number 12 and 13 compartment. One compartment was being used for a sitting room of sorts, and the other was being used for sleeping.
Who needs all that?
I don't know, but in continuing on in their statement, Count claims that they were in the 13th compartment playing cards together until 11 o'clock. At 11, the Countess went to bed for the night. Then, at some point, the conductor came by, and after he had left, the Count went to sleep, and both were not aware that anything had happened until the morning.
But what about his wife? Where was she?
Apparently, she takes a sleeping pill when traveling on trains. Now, personally, I think this is a little too coincidental for me.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing.
Anyway, when the Countess was finally interviewed, she had the exact same statement as her husband. She saw and heard nothing at all. Now we have Colonel Arbuthnot, who is apparently traveling from India. He had already met Miss Debenham when they shared a railroad car. The Colonel had been in McQueen's room before retiring to his room to go to bed, but the Colonel points out very specifically that they were not friends.
And let me guess, he also saw nothing.
Well, he actually saw a few people walking outside the room, but couldn't see who it was, and he also wasn't paying attention to what was going on around him. All he remembers was the conductor walking past, and maybe, just maybe, he saw a woman. Finally, we're on to our last first-class passenger, Mr. Hardman. Now, Mr. Hardman is actually a detective from New York.
What?
I know. Apparently, Mr. Hardman had been in Europe and was on his way home when he got a letter from the one and only Mr. Ratchet.
Huh?
What?
I know. Mr. Ratchet had apparently been getting some threatening letters that he was worried about. I think he deserved those letters, but that's a different story. But that is why he wanted Mr. Hardman on the same train as him, to make sure that no one got to him.
Well, somebody did a poor job.
Right? The plan was for Mr. Hardman to ride along next to him in a compartment next door. But that works out, as we know. Then, apparently, he had given a description of the perpetrator after him by Mr. Ratchet himself. In his statement on what happened that night, Mr. Hardman had apparently slept all day in order to stay up all night to keep watch. According to Mr. Hardman, during the night, there was nothing suspicious that happened, and there was no one around the outside or rear of the train. Now we're on to my final witness statement that I have, and it's Antonio Forcarelli. He works as an agent for the Ford Motor Cars. Apparently, throughout his entire interview, all he talked about was anything and everything that didn't have anything to do with the case. Now, Antonio shared a compartment with John Bull. When he arrived back at his compartment, it was empty, and then a little while later, John Bull came back and the conductor entered to make the bed. Then, Antonio smoked a cigarette and went to bed like anybody else would.
So, nothing really came from his statement.
You're right, all he did was talk in circles about himself.
Okay guys, it's Gentry here, and me and Meg just got our Care of Vitamins in the mail. And if you haven't heard of them, it is literally so amazing. All you have to do is go on and take a 5-minute quiz about your everyday life, your goals, and they will send you personalized vitamins. So me and Meg just opened ours. Let me grab my thing real quick. Okay, so I got vitamin B12, which is really good because I have just been lacking my energy lately. Digging into all these cases sometimes just takes the energy out of you. And also, I am iron deficient, so they sent me some iron and some zinc. Meg, what'd you get?
I got some vitamin C for some energy, some fish oil, and a women's probiotic.
Ooh, I think I also got a probiotic. You can't go wrong with that.
They are
and
the best.
Madison just took her quiz, and so we're getting her hooked on the train too. So what did you come up with?
It says I need to take some fish oil for my heart health, some iron because I, with my nails and stuff, I guess, I really don't know, and some vitamin C because your girl be having breakouts and needs some energy.
There you go. So if this sounds interesting to you, go to careof.com and start now, and you can use our code Out of the Ordinary to get your first month free.
Okay, now on to Mary Debenham. All she says that she did the night of the murder was go to bed and go to sleep. However, she did say that she woke up at 5 o'clock the next morning when she felt that the train had stopped. She poked her head out her door and saw a tall, thin woman in a scarlet kimono down the hall. But during her entire interview, she just seemed really underwhelmed and just overall unaffected by the fact that a murder had occurred.
Okay, y'all are going to have to follow my train of thought here. If we were all on a train together and we know we're just going on vacation, going to go have a good time, and then all of a sudden a train stops, somebody gets murdered, I feel like we would be pretty freaked out, you know, might want to jump off the train, go find some help. I don't think any of us would just kind of sit there and be like, eh, it happened, let's move on with our lives.
Yeah, I would be finding the closest exit as fast as I could.
Yeah, me too. So later on, Mary's asked about her roommate, Greta. They do end up confirming that based on Greta's timeline of the night that she's not a suspect, even though, like we said earlier, she was apparently the last one to see Ratchet alive. However, the only time that she was out of Mary's sight was around 10:30 p.m. to take her husband an aspirin, and we know that Ratchet could not have been killed that early. So naturally, at this point, Perot is pretty suspicious of Mary. She's too calm. She's too cool. Something's just off here. The last person pulled in for questioning was the princess's maid, Hildegard Schmidt. She says that she went to bed as usual and got woken up by an attendant that told her that the princess needed something.
And so she went to her room, gave her a massage, and read to her till she fell asleep. Nothing out of the ordinary. However, she said when she went back to her compartment that the conductor came out a few doors down and nearly ran her over. Odd, but she doesn't seem to give it a whole lot of thought and can't identify him in any of the men that Perot puts in front of her. So at this point, we've talked to everyone. We have all of the alibis. And now we have three working theories on what time we think Ratchett was murdered. The first one being 1:15 in the morning. If you remember from our last episode, we talked about a watch that was found on the scene. It was broken and stopped ticking at 1:15 in the morning, which led everyone to initially believe that this could have been the time that the murder was committed. However, our second working theory is that it was committed earlier than 1:15 in the morning and the evidence was faked. Or it was later than 1:15 in the morning and the evidence was also faked. So after some searching, no one is able to find this man, aka conductor, that Hildegard said that she ran into. He doesn't really seem to actually exist. And based on this, he's either hiding or multiple people have committed the murder.
Wait, what? So he just disappeared?
Yeah, pretty much. Nobody was able to find him anywhere. So anyway, as Perot is coming to all of these conclusions, Mrs. Hubbard comes barreling in, hollering about a knife covered in blood that she found in her bag, and then promptly faints.
Y'all, what in the world is happening, and what in the world is this case?
I actually have no idea. So they run to go find the knife, and everyone is gathered around Mrs. Hubbard's compartment staring at this cheaply made fake oriental knife that looks like it's got rust all over it. But the doctor does confirm that it could have caused any of Ratchett's wounds, and they search all the rest of her stuff and don't find anything else. Okay, so at this point, Perot's going around and he is searching through all of the passengers' luggage for more evidence. And after doing this, he has found pipe cleaners and Colonel Arbuthnot's things, which if you remember from our last episode, we talked a little about some that Perot had found in Ratchett's room that were super similar to this. He found a wet label on the Countess's suitcase. And he found the infamous scarlet kimono folded neatly on his very own suitcase, obviously planted there by the killer to throw off the search.
What could all these possibly mean? Like, who do you think did it? Tune in next week to listen to the final episode and find out the truth behind what really happened on the Orient Express. And let us know your thoughts on social media. Tag us at Out of the Ordinary.